You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello and welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. Today we are filming live on YouTube and Facebook. My name is Dan Rowlandson. I'm joined by our football editor at Birmingham Live, Matt Kendrick. A formal intro for a change, but I'm feeling very annoyed at the moment. Matt, are you well?
I am well, yeah. I'm feeling a bit flat, to be honest. I don't know, we're going to talk about the penalty decision that wasn't at great length, I'm sure, but I felt it was a raggy performance anyway. You know,
what did you think of the game overall? I thought it was chaotic, is how I would class it, very end to end. I thought it was a good advert for the Premier League. I thought it was a good match for the neutral. But for a Villa fan, I come away thinking we've deserved at least a point there, if not more. On a good day, I think we score four or five there, and that's a little frustrating.
I think Villa looked very, very bright going forward, but just when it got anywhere near the penalty box, they just lacked, you know, just indecisive, weren't they? But yeah, go on, let's chat through the penalty first of all. Let's do this game in reverse.
Okay, yeah, well, it's the main talking point, isn't it? All the comments flying through already saying, can't believe it. So first of all, I guess we'll get our own opinions out of the way first. In one word, was it a penalty, yes or no? What do you think?
I think it was a penalty, but I don't know how much of it is my massive dollop of bias towards Aston Villa that says it's a penalty. Because I know this is on me rather than anything else, but I know that if it was the other end of the pitch, I'd have been saying, he took a bit of the ball, and using that as the kind of main mitigation, which Michael seems to be doing.
I'm not sure about that. I think if it was the other way, I'd be going, yeah, but he has put his boot through his shin as well, to be fair. Maybe I wouldn't. Maybe I'm trying to be noble and look at it without bias, but there's a few different
kinds of tackle. I suppose I don't think he was in control of that tackle. I think Trezeguet's done him by taking a touch inside him.
Yeah.
So if he has taken any of the ball, it's more by luck than intent. Do you know what I mean?
100%. So, yeah.
It's a clumsy tackle. I don't think he could have had too many arguments if it was given as a penalty. Well, it was given a penalty.
Well, yeah.
I think we'd have missed it anyway.
I said it would be typical for us, because I was kind of live tweeting or live Facebook posting some of the updates, and I was like, penalty to Villa in the 93rd minute, even though I knew there'd be a VAR check. But I looked at it once first time, I thought, oh, well, he's clearly hit his shin, so this isn't going to be overruled. Michael Oliver, the best referee in England, one of the best we've got, instantly points to the spot to give the penalty, and then VAR replaying it over and over again, and you start to think, oh dear, surely not. Then he goes over to check it, and I'm thinking, well, He's given it, so he's not going to overturn his own decision and embarrass himself by saying, oh, actually, all VAR is right here. I thought he'd just go over and go, well, yeah, he did touch his shin. It is a penalty. Crack on with the game, and here we go. So the fact that he's overruled his own decision, and it's the smallest of margins that he's won the ball. I think it was, who's on commentary, remind me? Martin Keown. He said something like, if that was a foul anywhere else on the pitch, it would be given. And we'd be saying things like, well, he didn't get enough of the ball. We were saying just before we came off air how much of the ball one needs to take to class it as a foul or not. I'm not so sure, but
very formal, wasn't he? How much of the ball one needs to take? You've been watching The Crown?
I haven't actually, but the rest of my family have, and they don't shut up about it. But I don't know what the rules state. You look at that and think, if he has touched the ball, like you said, it's a smidgen, it's a fraction, and he doesn't mean it anyway. If he dispossesses Trezeguet and runs away with the ball, but he's gone through him as well, you'd think, well, at least he's controlled it and he's won possession. It's just bounced away, hasn't it? And he's clearly hit Trezeguet's shin anyway. So that is a penalty, and frankly, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of VAR. I'm sick of the referees. And well,
Before today, I kind of thought that I quite liked the development of refs going and checking the screens themselves. But
not when they go over there and make a stupid decision.
Not when they go over there and it goes against us. But I think the issue is that if it's, you know, my understanding is that for a decision the referee gives with his naked eye to be overturned, there's got to be a clear and obvious error that he's made. Now, if there's a clear and obvious error, as much as I like the fact that the referee can go and check it, surely the people in Stockley Park can spot that. Yeah. Oh, we're not sure about it. Go and have another look. That's clear and obvious then, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just a jumble and a mess, isn't it?
I've said before about the clear and obvious thing. There's been a few kind of suggestions on how VAR should be introduced, whether it should be like a review system like cricket or tennis or whatever, or whether it should be, you know, you're limited to a certain amount of replays to really make it clear and obvious. But if you said to the referees, right, you can replay this incident 5 times and then you've got to make your decision, they'll be saying, well, 5 times isn't enough, so that's why we got the decision wrong. So I don't think there's ever really a sweet spot where everybody wins, but I don't know. It's just, I don't know what the solution is apart from get rid of VAR and go back to referees making their own mistakes, because tonight we'd have benefited off the back of that, whereas other times you clearly don't benefit either. So maybe it's just one of those that we're just going to have to suck it up and think, well, some things go for you, some things don't.
I'd like for them to define what clear and obvious is, because at the moment, clear and obvious is about as clear and obvious as the Times cryptic clock crossword or one of those magic eye puzzles. It's, you know, there's nothing clear and obvious about it. It's just kind of, it's just adding an extra layer of complication.
Yeah. Well, they said, didn't they, that VAR would end the debate in football and end the talking points and the controversy, and all it's done is add more since the last season and a half it's been here. So I don't think controversy is going away anytime soon, is it, when VAR is still around?
Well, yeah, and it's the whole thing, the whole sorry episode has detracted away from my great gag about VAT should have checked the other one at the other end because it was cash in hand.
I saw that on Twitter. Rubbish, to be honest. It really made me groan. What was the Tariq one? The Brightoner or one Tariq Pony?
One Tariq Pony.
Slightly better.
Did you see his little face when he was sent off, bless him?
He's a very small guy, isn't he?
He is.
Good player, to be fair. Me and my dad were watching it together and he was saying, oh, he's been annoying, which I know means he's been good. And it's annoying when you face somebody like that. I thought there's a couple of comments just come in saying talk about Brighton's style of play and how can fans enjoy that. I don't think Brighton were a bad side, do you? They're playing on the counter-attack and a few nice balls up to Welbeck or Mopai and kind of run the channels and then try and nick a goal. I think Brighton are a decent side.
I think you play within your means, don't you? I thought they did a job on Villa pretty well today. The opening goal just infuriated me, to be honest. Mm. It's, you know, and I know Villa had got a bit of momentum and were trying to push up the field, but for Matt Target and Tyro Mings to kind of allow that to happen down their side of the pitch. And
yeah,
you need to be aware of your surroundings. And if you're standing in your own half, if you're standing in the opposition half, therefore the centre forward can't be offside. You've got to, you know, there's got to be more concentration. There's got to be a better all-round kind of spatial awareness than that. And it just annoyed me. It was a lovely finish, to be fair, by Welbeck.
Yeah, it was.
Brilliant finish. And could have scored again, couldn't he, a couple of minutes later. But it's just this kind of habit, Villa being architects of their own downfall, you know, not leaving the back door open like that. I think Villa would have had enough over the first half to create enough pressure to try and find a way in. But all of a sudden, you're playing catch-up again. And what's that now? How many goals at Villa Park? Is it 4 against Leeds, 4 against South? No, yeah, 3 against Leeds, 4 against Southampton, 2 against 2 against Brighton today.
Heading in the right direction.
Yeah. Another couple of weeks, we'll be fine.
I don't think Newcastle will come here and score 2 goals, put it that way.
Yeah, well, let's not tempt fate. But so I think it was just a lot of naivety today. I thought there was a lack of composure from Villa defensively. And I thought, like I said, I just don't think they were decisive enough. You know, there's a couple of moments, wasn't the first half, when Consa probably could have gambled on the ball that Traore put in and didn't, and the ball flashed across the goal. There's another one, I thought, where I can't remember. I think Mings got half a contact that went towards goal, and Watkins kind of watched the goalkeeper clear it off his line without really putting any pressure on him. And so I know we're splitting hairs a little bit, but these are the things that make a difference, and these are the things that mean Villa's kind of bright start and winning away at Arsenal and battering Liverpool and beating Leicester. They're undoing bits of that with results like this, and it means that, you know, we've been realistic or tried to be realistic in recent weeks, but you'd still take, you know, you'd take 12th, wouldn't you? I would.
Yeah, absolutely. I would as well. There's a few comments coming in specifically about Tyrone Mings. A lot actually saying about, well, some of them I can't repeat because of the language, but basically saying how bad he was and how bad he's been. Now, I think he didn't have a great game today, but there's people saying as if he's bad all the time. The guy's just come back from international duty playing for England, so he's not a bad footballer. he's just had a bad day today. I thought we got caught out a few times, but you're talking just then about splitting hairs that with the chances for Luke created. There's a couple when Emi Martinez has had to rush off his line and stop a chance as well for Brighton. So that game, both sides will probably look at it and think we could have scored 4 or 5 there today, and it could have been a really, really open game or a 5-5 draw or something silly. It just feels a little bit disappointing. I think if we'd have just lost 2-1, that would have been bad enough, but because of the whole VAR thing at the end, it just sours it a little bit further. What did you think of Mings, though? Is he a terrible footballer?
I don't think he's a terrible footballer. I think he's one of the two best centre-halves we've got at the football club. So, but you know what I mean? What are your options?
Well, yeah, exactly. This is why people were saying sign a centre-back in the summer.
Yeah, well, I don't fancy Neil Taylor coming in at left central defence. So, I don't think it was purely Mings. I thought a few of them were a little bit off it today. I thought McGinn had a very mixed game. I thought he was good in places and then a bit poor and rusty in other places. You know, I suppose, without wishing to make excuses, I suppose there's been several players who have come back from international duty after a bit of action. It shouldn't be an excuse, and it's not an excuse. I mean, who was your man of the match today? I thought Matty Cash did well again.
Yes. I'd go for either of those two on the right side. I thought Trezeguet was good as well.
Yeah,
where he blasted every single one over the bar.
It's obviously Spoon. You know, he had two goes at the end. He played a 1-2 off the goalkeeper, hasn't he, first half, and then smashed that one off target.
Off Matty Target?
No, he might have gone in. If he'd gone in off target, he scored the winner last time, didn't he, Target? Against Brighton. Yeah, I thought Matty Cash probably just about edged it for me. You know, we've got the blow of losing Barkley as well in the stages. And, you know, you just wonder, don't you? You hope it's a minor hamstring niggle that doesn't kind of disrail and disrupt his season, because this was the time when we thought Ross Barkley was going to build some momentum. Even if he was going to build momentum and we've got to hand him back to Chelsea, we thought we were going to get a good season out of him.
Yeah. It's typical kind of luck, isn't it, that, don't you think? We've got Grealish goes away on international duty. Douglas Luiz flies around halfway around the world to Brazil. John McGinn gets Scotland to the Euros. Conor Hourihan even gets minutes for the Republic of Ireland. Trezeguet goes off to Egypt. Yeah, Ross Barker, the guy who's been sat at Ballymore for 2 weeks, is the one who pulls his hamstring in the first 3 or 4 minutes. What's the chances of that?
Yeah, I don't think Villa can grumble about hard luck with injuries, though. They've been able to name a pretty much unchanged team for most of the season so far. Like I said, I just hope it's a minor niggle. But yeah, Traore didn't really... You know, it surprised me. I mean, I think it sent a lot about where Conor Hourihan perhaps is.
Yeah, I thought he'd come on.
In order now, the fact that he's brought Traore on and played him down the centre. I thought the obvious thing he was going to do was put... When I saw the board come up with Traore, I thought he was going to put Grealish down the centre and bring Traore on the wing. And eventually that did happen.
Yeah. I don't think you can play someone like Traore, essentially, because he's so one-footed. Like, when we signed him, Leon fans were talking about him only ever using his left foot and not having a right foot. And then he scored that goal in the League Cup against Bristol, maybe, with his right foot. And he's like, oh, what are they talking about? But when he does have the ball, he always wants to go on his left. He always wants to cut back on his left. I don't think you can play somebody that one-footed in the middle. So that seems like, whilst I thought he was decent, that seemed like a waste of 20 minutes or so, just not sticking Grealish as the number 10 and being a like-for-like replacement for Barkley.
Yeah, although having said that, even within 10 or 15 minutes of the change, Villa were still creating chances and still looked like they're on top, to be honest. But I think there was, I don't know, I think there's a little bit of naivety from last season crept into the performance today as well. You know, we've spoken, haven't we, in recent weeks about Villa being more streetwise. But I don't think they were. I thought, you know, Target got hoodwinked by Neil Mopay, didn't he, into giving away, into that booking. I think Douglas Luiz had a little bit of a nibble of him as well. And I just think...
Put his head against him or something.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. Who we got next? West Ham away and then Newcastle at home?
That's right, yeah. West Ham's on Monday now, so I think it's a 9-day break until our next game. And then it's another Saturday, 3 o'clock against Newcastle, as it stands. It's difficult, isn't it? There's a couple of comments. I mean, there's so many coming in. A lot from rivals across the city, because they played last night, haven't they? So they've got nothing to do on a Saturday rather than talk about Villa. So I can't find it.
Sleeping from that.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it was awful. Somebody said something like, you can't, what we said, it's annoying to beat Arsenal so convincingly and then go away for 2 weeks and come back and you want to follow that up with a result against somebody who sat down in 16th, having only won one game all season. But Brighton are a decent side. I think there's been a lot of talk about they're in a false position and the stats show that they're actually better than they've been doing. And I think today you can see that they will win a fair few games, but it is disappointing, isn't it, that you can be so good against Leicester, Liverpool and Arsenal and then lose to, with all due respect, Brighton, Southampton and Leeds?
Yeah, it's Aston Villa for you, the minute. You know, they serve you a Michelin-star meal one day and then give you a kind of burnt fruit pastel on some mouldy bread, don't they, the next. It's Villa, you know, it's...
It's football, isn't it? These things happen. If you were a mid-table side, we will win 50%, won't we? We're gonna win some and lose some. So it's nice to beat the big boys. And it makes it all the more frustrating that we can't beat the small boys.
I missed it today, though. I'm really, really missed not being there. I could just imagine the kind of, you know, kind of your collars turned up, your little bit of Bovril.
the boots mark over.
Having a good moan and a chunter, yeah, moaning at Michael Oliver. Yeah, it's not so much fun when your wife's telling you to shut up.
At least it's not on PPV anymore, though. That's one bonus.
No, that is the...
Watch the game properly.
Yeah, that is the one highlight. But, yeah...
Can you put it down to the international break? Is it as simple as just saying that a couple of the players are maybe a little bit tired and it was just a bad... I say it's a bad day for Villa. I don't even particularly think it was a bad day. I thought we were still okay. I think we're just defensively, the concentration just wasn't quite there.
Yeah, look, I think if Villa had been more clinical, Trezeguet could have had a hat-trick. Like I said, there's a couple of chances that they had a nibble at in the first half that they didn't. You know, there's a penalty decision, really disputed penalty, gone against them. You know, it could have been, you know, it's stating the obvious, but it could have gone either three ways, couldn't it? So I don't think it's doom and gloom. I just think it's, if Villa are going to properly kick on this season, they've done the hard bit. They've smashed the champions.
Yeah.
You know, they've beaten who are the league leaders in Leicester. They've gone and embarrassed Arsenal. They can do these things. They can beat the top teams. They just need to kind of be a bit more savvy against the lesser teams, really.
Is there anything in that in terms of we step up our game more against the bigger sides or anything like that? We're more complacent against the sides towards the bottom, or is it just random?
I'm not sure. I suppose the bigger sides, the onus is on them to step out and play a little bit more. Whereas teams like Brighton can come to Villa Park and just be content to kind of spring Villa as and when. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think today probably, again, exposed the lack of the strength in depth because an early injury happened and Villa really couldn't. Well, I don't know. It's hard, isn't it? Because I say they didn't replace him, but then they still made most of the running in the game. So perhaps I'm being a bit harsh.
I don't think it's not one of those defeats like Southampton when you look at it and go, well, we were just rubbish today and Southampton scored some great goals and that's that. You look at the game today and think, well, we did all right there. It's just I think both sides play a similar style and cancel each other out. You could replay that game 10 times and, like you said, there'll be a couple of draws in there. Brighton will win a few and Villa would win a few. I don't think there was much to separate the two sides in terms of their playing style. That's why it was so end-to-end.
What did you think of Jack today?
Quiet, not his usual self. Maybe that's tiredness as well. He still did fine, but we know what he's capable of. And it's the same for the whole team, isn't it? Same with Ollie Watkins. There's moments where he held the ball up really well, and you think, yeah, he's bringing the play in together. But he drifted out wide at one point and put a great cross into the back post, and there's no one there because Ollie Watkins is the one putting it in the box. It just feels a little bit. As much as we're creating chances and we look okay, it feels a little bit disjointed at times. It feels a bit rushed or a little bit panicky. And then you see it falling to someone like Trezeguet who blasts it out of the stadium. And so I just think we need to be a bit more clinical. A bit more clinical going forward and a bit more concentration at the back and we'd win the league.
Yeah, easy. Where'd that leave us in the table? About fifth or sixth?
Sixth still, I think. Let's have a quick look. I'm pretty sure we're still sixth. Yes, 16 points. Chelsea are now top with 18. Eight games played, same as everybody else, apart from Chelsea and Tottenham are on 9. So it's still decent, isn't it? There's still nothing to get concerned about. Like you said, if you still take 12th, 13th, 11th, 10th were still perfectly fine. You would look at the next two games, West Ham and Newcastle, and think there's a real opportunity there to get 4 or 6 points. If it's still turns out that we can only beat the good sides this season and we're looking at 0 points after those next two games, then maybe it's time to be a little bit concerned. But I'm pretty easy at the moment, to be honest.
Do you think the amount of goals that Villa have shipped in recent-ish weeks does strengthen the need for more central defensive options in January? I mean, we've got Engels, who's the kind of forgotten man, who can't get him, you know, either can't get fit or can't do enough to force his way back in. Still the last thing that I can remember, well, the two last memories of Engels are the lifting his foot over the ball for the goal against Tottenham and then that one that's come back off the bar at Wembley. And since then, we've not seen him, have we? And, you know, Courtney Hawes, is he carrying a knockdown, do we know? Because he's not been making the bench lately.
No idea. I think he was injured at one point. I don't know whether he's just not recovered from that yet. We're not going to change it, are we? We're not going to suddenly go, Mings hasn't had a great game here, so Bjorn Engels is going to play against West Ham. I don't think we'll change the centre-back pairing at any point. My stance remains on the same as it was in the summer. I think if you are going to improve centre-back, you're going to have to spend 25 or 30 million to get somebody who's better than probably Mings at the moment, because I think out of the two, Konsa is the one that's now become a little bit more undroppable. But Villa aren't going to go and spend 30 million on a centre-back in January. I don't think it's the time to do major surgery, especially in your defence.
So, no, I think
perhaps, but I just don't think they need to yet.
I suppose you're right. You know, Mings himself cost, what, about 25 million quid, I think. And,
yeah, especially with,
you know, if you want that upgrading your defence, you might have to spend somewhere near 40 million to do what? To make the difference between finishing 13th or 12th?
Doesn't make much business sense, does it?
It doesn't really. What
do you think about those two players that came on then? Not Traore, because they said when he came off, oh, the sub has been subbed. And I thought they'd made a mistake at first, because it felt like he played the whole game, because he basically did. Yeah. But the other two, El Ghazi and Harahan, talk about our lack of squad depth. They both come on. Do you think they do enough to show that there's good squad depth there for Dean Smith and that we've got options? Does Harahan do enough to show that he can come in and replace Barkley if he's injured for 5 or 6 weeks? Or is it Traore at number 10?
I thought he'd said a lot that he didn't come on straight away. I thought he showed Smith's thinking. I don't think he did enough Harahan in the last, whatever, 10, 12 minutes to change Smith's mind. But equally, has Traore done enough in the 75 minutes that he's been on? I think I don't know.
Traore was decent. There's a few comments saying that he was poor. I thought he was okay. A little bit frustrating, but he didn't do anything to make me think, oh, he's not a good player there.
I thought he was okay. I still think, you know, the next game, you think, I'd agree with Smith, he'd probably be in my pecking order ahead of Harahan, to be honest. And El Ghazi's El Ghazi, isn't he?
Yeah, I didn't think he was effective at all when he came on. I know he didn't have long, but
I think we've said
really this, off the ball, hasn't he?
We've said this all along, haven't we, that the first 11 looks strong, and it's when you scratch beneath the surface. That's ultimately, me in my mind, which will make Villa finish just outside the top 10 rather than in the top 10, the fact that when winter bites, these injuries, the suspensions and all these kind of things, there's not going to be enough kind of... The support cast is not as good as the main lineup. Obviously, otherwise they'd be the main lineup.
Yeah. We talk about Jack being quiet. Some of that will be the effect of missing his best pal, Ross Barkley, for 85 minutes as well, I'd have thought. And if he's out for a decent chunk of fixtures, that will hurt Villa.
Yeah, I mean, he's coped without Ross Barkley for most of his career and on international duty. But you're right, it did seem, and I think the commentators referenced this towards now, it did seem like Villa were kind of relying on Jack and Jack alone to find the magic again in the, you know, in the second half particularly. So there was going to be an injury come at some stage. There's going to be an injury come at some stage. And we could, if it came at left back, is the left back deputy really that great? If it came at right back, possibly, because we rate Gilbert. Was he even on the bench? Villa losing Barkley is a big blow. I'm saying that Villa losing any of their first team players is a big blow, because there's just not enough in reserve. I mean, Gilbert's not even near the bench. We've got El Mohammadi on the bench. What point was I making, Dan?
I don't know. I wasn't listening. I was reading the comments. People calling us inbred for being Villa. because of all the opposition fans here watching, which I don't understand, but they're entitled to watch, I guess.
Has Netflix gone down?
Must have done. Leeds fans in here back again. Good to see the Leeds fans. People asking whether we're crying. No dry eyes in the Midlands. Not. Are you crying, Matt? I can't see any tears.
I don't know, mate, to be honest. I think my tear ducts gave in a long time ago.
I think that's probably it, isn't it? We've done 25 minutes there about a 2-1 defeat, with the biggest talking point is the VAR thing. And ultimately, I don't think there's much to worry about. It's just a frustrating afternoon where we could have won, we could have drew, we could have lost, and we did. And that's basically the best way to summarise it, isn't it? We'll get James to do a proper analysis later.
Yeah, it's one of those football matches where we could have won, could have lost, or could have drawn, you say.
Yeah. That happens sometimes. Yeah. I suppose it's been remiss of us not to give a little plug to our Gareth Barry podcast, a man that started his career at Brighton and had a big, long career at Aston Villa. Should we play a clip to tease it for the audience?
Yeah, go on. What is he?
Find out, mate.
As Villa fans, we're probably success-starved compared to what we used to get in the 80s and 90s. It felt like a big defining moment that Villa didn't kick on against in that year's UEFA Cup. But when I look back at it, I think the Moscow game was actually the last 32. It wasn't, you know, I think it's sometimes we reinvent it as a semi-final or something. Sense amongst the players then that it was a missed opportunity.
At the time, I can't exactly say where we were in the league, but I could only imagine we were flying in the top four. And I sort of understood his reasonings at the time because, you know, he wanted us fresh. We were winning. We were probably winning regularly. The confidence was high in the league. But certainly looking back now, I felt with the squad we had there, it was probably an opportunity missed because I've always felt, you know, teams should go for trophies, whether it's the League Cup. Probably looking back now, I would love to have seen a team go there capable of going through.
Nice bloke, isn't he, Gareth Barry?
He is, mate. Yeah, he was. I still think he looks like he's filming it in a passport booth.
he still looks like he's 25 to me.
It was, I'm about 2 years older than him. I think I must have had a tougher paper round. but no, he was brilliant, wasn't he? And like I said, we're trying to get a few more guests on for lockdown two. We made it a feature of lockdown one. I think we've had a fairly good response to it, haven't we? But it started the debate of whether he's a legend or whether he's not a legend.
That was an interesting one. Where did we fall on that? I said he is a legend. That was my synopsis.
I said he was as well.
I did it. I don't know whether there's much debate. I put it on Facebook and there's a few people saying he's an icon or he's a hero. And to me, that all pretty much the same. But yeah, it started slowly, but I think that's what 12,000 views it's up to now. So if you're watching this live on Facebook, you can also find us on YouTube at Claret Blue Podcast. If you're listening to this and you've missed it because you've been away for the international break, I don't know where you've been because we've all been at home. So it's not like you've been on holiday as well. You can go and catch up with Gareth Barry. We've chatted to him we were with him for about an hour and a half, weren't we? And I think the episode is about an hour, is it? An hour and 2 minutes. So go back and catch up with that if you missed it.
Should leave that on the screen. It looks like we've got him as a guest talking about the Brighton game. Sorry, Barry. Sorry, guys. We've got some problems down the line. Yeah.
He's gone. He's gone. we'll call it a day there. Thank you everyone who tuned in live on Facebook or YouTube this afternoon. And we'll be back probably later in the week to do a bit of a Q&A or an update towards the... When do we play next Monday? So, we'll do something maybe Thursday or Friday of next week with Ash Priest, see what he thought of Brighton. Yes, Matt?
Have we not got another player one? Is that going out the week after?
I'm currently editing another player interview, yes. I don't know when that's coming out yet. It'll possibly be this week. If not, it'll be the week after. Are we going to reveal who that is, or should we just keep
guessing? No. Leave it for now. Watch it. So I enjoyed it, though.
It was good. It was very good. We'll be back at some point next week, and then you and me will be back again on Monday night. We'll be back for the night game shifts when we play West Ham on Monday Night Football. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you, Matt Kendrick, for joining me, and we'll be back soon.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, up the Villa!